We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On today's episode of BuzzBeat, we get into the Hornets' 10-point win over the Wizards and briefly discuss how Charlotte approached the trade deadline last week. All that up next.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ, oh my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-footer on the ground!
Just stop it already!
All right, guys, welcome into another episode. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by BG and Spencer today on a post-game edition of BuzzBeat as the Hornets just beat the Wizards 114-104. They are now in fourth place. Well, they were in fourth place heading into it, and they continue to be in fourth place after this victory with a record of 24-22. And I want to thank both of you guys because I know you guys would probably rather be watching some Elite Eight basketball right now. So thanks for joining me on the podcast here, guys.
Absolutely. I'm going to fire up Southern Cal Gonzaga tape as soon as we're done recording here tonight.
You're welcome, Richie. I have it on in the background, though. So, I'll at least be – I'm kidding. You have my full attention.
If it was Michigan-Alabama, not Michigan-UCLA, it would have been harder to fight for my attention. But I'll watch Michigan-UCLA tape tomorrow morning. So.
And speaking of Elite Eight, we've got something going on our BuzzBeat Twitter handle here. We've got we put out a poll for your favorite guest that you guys have enjoyed on the podcast so far. And I don't know if you guys saw the results recently, but which Carolina pulled off the comeback and beat Ashley Shamedy? I don't know if you saw that.
I did. That was some really good celebration on Twitter. I enjoyed that from which Carolina.
He was definitely campaigning, and it worked. It worked. It was funny because his poll had like 40 or 50 more votes than any of the others just because he was trying to get others involved.
There you go.
All right, guys, let's talk about this game, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the in-between here. It was a game that we were talking about prior that they just needed to win with the Brooklyn game coming up against a team like the Wizards that is obviously not very good. Sometimes you can get into some bad habits and not play the right way knowing that you can kind of make up for it in the later part of the game just because you're a better team than the Wizards. But it was an ugly game throughout. The Hornets went through some lulls. There was points in the game where you thought they were going to break away with like a 10-point lead, and then as immediately following that, the Wizards would cut it down to 5. The one player that seemed to always come up with timely shots again and again this season is Terry Rozier. The biggest thing for me, like I said, is not just the points, just is when he's making these shots. In the third quarter, he had 12 points in that quarter alone, and it felt like every time the Wizards made a run, he came back and hit a timely three. And in the fourth quarter, he came up with some clutch shots as well. He won't win Most Improved Player, and he probably won't even be in the conversation for that award. But just some of the subtle jumps that he made this season, the subtle strides that he's made from last season, I think it's something that we probably should talk about more. His mid-range game has improved. So he's just adding different things here and there, and he continues to show up clutch for this Hornets team. And I think he was the biggest reason as to why this Hornets team won this game?
Yeah, again, no question. You know, he takes over in these big minutes. You know, Terry started slow tonight. Didn't look like it was really going to be his game. And then, you know, we quickly got 12, I think, there in the third quarter and never really cooled down. But his I think what I see offensively, his development, where it's really taken off, is there's just less wasted motion. You know, we talked a lot last season on this podcast about, you know, him snaking pick and rolls and kind of like running in to Cody Zeller or Bismack Biyombo, like on occasion last year. And I think part of that was Terry's development. I think the other part of that was those guys learning to play with him, because he still snakes that pick and roll the same way. But he's got the footwork down and the change of pace down, and he can consistently get his defenders in that mid-post area on their heels. And then he just gets right into that little step back, jump shot. Or if they're still right in his hip, he gets a little, you know, a little ball fake and he gets into the floater. And he's just really got an array of tricks, honestly, in that mid-range area. And it's super, super efficient. And it has taken a huge leap this year. But I would say, and Del Curry said it on the broadcast tonight, and I think this is probably the best way to put it, he's aggressive, really aggressive, hunting his shot, as he should be, towards the end of games. But he does it at his own pace and is under control as any guard in the NBA right now. And that, and I mean, that's just, look, young players develop. This is what, you know, this is what they do. And my reasoning from the beginning of, hey, let's not laugh this one down the toilet when we acquired Terry, is that he was still very young. He was 25 years old. And we've seen him take a leap last year, more shooting the ball. This year, really another leap shooting the ball. And then a leap actually playmaking for himself, getting his shot in that mid-range area and at the rim effectively whenever he wants. And it's... Is it surprising? Yes. But I think this is here to stay. I think this is Terry Rozier. I mean, he's got a chance to be one of the best closers in the league. I mean, ultimately, at 30 years old, you know what? Terry Rozier probably does land on an off-the-bench kind of role. But, like, he's got a chance to be a closer for a long time, I think. And he's a big reason of why the Hornets have the ridiculous clutch efficiency and record that they have.
Yeah, the Terry snaking back in the way of the guys who were screening and rolling for him last year. That's the kind of stack pick and roll that you definitely don't want. That's not how James Borrego has drawn it up in the huddle. Yeah, just initial thoughts on sort of Rozier and how it tracks with the game tonight. He's shooting 47% on catch and shoot threes this season. It just, this is a gear that you just didn't see in Boston. You could have envisioned him certainly scoring more with more usage, but this is a guy that was brought in to be a point guard. And in my head, I was thinking lots of spread ball screens from the middle of the court. And like, that wouldn't be good, but we all know that. Like, that wouldn't be, that's not what Terry does best. He can run a pick and roll, but he's usually better if it's out off Chicago action, right? Or you empty out a corner aside for him, as opposed to just, let's just give, you know, Terry 30 high pick and roll possessions per game. It's a little different maybe against Washington, because for the most part in pick and roll, they're really dropping their big guys and you can just sort of get whatever you want off the pull up. They moved Len and Lopez higher and closer to the level of the screen at times during the Charlotte's win tonight, but none of those coverages were really working. And with that catch and shoot ability of Rozier, like, there's just, they are able to take advantage of drop centers in ways that don't involve, oh, let's just come out of the timeout and run a pick and roll with Terry. A lot of these actions they run that are designed to get Terry a catch and shoot three, like curling off a screen on any of their throwback actions, any of their slice pin down screen the screener stuff. All of those actions are absolute money against drop centers, right? To get like Terry coming off a pin for a catch and shoot three. So that's just another sort of creative way to play the strengths of Terry as an offensive player and really pick on the weaknesses or the vulnerabilities of a drop center defense. It was not the case when they played Miami the other week and Bam was just spent half the game just gobbling up every pick and roll or pin down that Charlotte was trying to run in the middle of the court. Man, he's ridiculous. other things tonight. Anything else you guys want to say on Rozier?
The only other thing that I would say, it's kind of to your point, Brian, that with LaMelo out of the lineup because of injury, with Monk being in and out of the lineup with his injury recently, he has had more opportunities to bring the ball up the court as a quote-unquote primary ball handler. But the way that James Borrego runs the offense, he gets the ball out of his hands quicker. Like, he's not like a point guard in a true sense. So the offense gets the ball out of his hands, and he does come off of those curls, like you said, on those wide baseline cuts. That's the only thing that I wanted to mention. Even with the chance to be the primary ball handler, he's doing a better job within the offense to get rid of the ball and do what he does best and come off of those curls. So that's the last thing that I would say about that.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it sort of opens up another topic that is maybe too deep for us to go all the way into, but I can even sort of segue out of it as well. But just like, yeah, it helps that they have some playmakers in the front court, right? Like, I thought Miles Bridges had a good game at the nail against Washington, made a couple plays late when the Wizards trapping zone defense. And obviously the Washington game was not a particularly good one for PJ, who got two early fouls and then sort of seemed to check out, unfortunately. But we know what he can do. And I really think some of the five out stuff that they've done with PJ recently has looked really good when they can really open up the court. And yeah, they run a lot of those, that like five out with Zeller in the middle handling the ball, where they get to those delay actions, those delay sets. And so, yeah, those are ways to just sort of like, yes, Terry is the guy bringing it across half court, and he's the guy that may finish the possession. But there's like a bridge between those two things, which is, I think, good offense.
It's Richie again, this time to talk to you about hosting your own podcast with our distributor, Blue Wire Pods. And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and you just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive a personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard and Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cody Zeller was good tonight. It was a fun game for him, I thought. That was one of the better games he's had. Maybe more complete games, because he's done some good stuff recently coming off the bench for them. But once again, he was great on the offensive glass tonight. Hit five offensive rebounds. He was so good on the glass. To me, at times, it really felt like Charlotte was like, at one point, I was like, man, they're really killing the Wizards on the glass, it seems like, here. And really, Charlotte did not have a great night, like in terms of offensive rebound percentage. But certainly Cody helped and really cashed in on a couple of those extra possessions. He had a couple nice floaters early in the game when Washington was dropping their big guys. And then he had a couple nice plays in transition. And then I also thought like the pick and roll dunk he had with Devontae right before halftime where they came up I think it was Leonard Lopez came up higher to level the screen and he dove hard. And I just thought his screening against Washington's guards in giving Charlotte's guards, you know, runways into that drop coverage for Hayward to make plays. And I thought Gordon was really aggressive tonight for Terry, for Devontae to look for their shot. I just thought Zeller was really, really pivotal to Charlotte versus Washington.
And something he's really good at, we saw two times at least tonight, it might have been three of his five offensive rebounds, but you know, when he is positioned, you know, at the nail in that kind of middle of the floor area, he's so good at tracking those long offensive rebounds off jump shots. And that's just something Biz doesn't do because that's not where he's placed, you know, in that area. They don't run that same action when Biz is in the game. It's more traditional high pick and roll, Spain pick and roll. But Cody is really, really good at tracking those long offensive rebounds. We saw that again tonight. So, yeah, totally agree. One of the best games we've seen from Cody in a long time, and refreshing because the Hornets absolutely need, you know, 25-ish minutes from him now that we know that Bismack Biyombo, Cody Zeller is the true center rotation.
Yeah, that was the one thing too. Once PJ got those second to two fouls and sort of checked out, it was just like, damn, like the lineups, like I thought this was one of those games where it was like, you really didn't feel PJ at five at all. Mm-hmm. Like Biz. I mean, there was Biz and Zeller the entire game. Those guys played the entire game at center for Charlotte. Both those guys played 24 minutes each. Charlotte was plus 11 with Zeller on the court and minus three with Biz in the game.
I do want to bring up the minutes real quick with the center rotation. I'm sure you guys have noticed this in the past few games or so. It feels like Biyombo has been playing more minutes than Cody Zeller. I actually just looked it up in the last three games. Biyombo, I mean, not including this game, but Biyombo has played 63 minutes while Cody Zeller has only played 39. And to your point, Brian, they both played the same amount of minutes tonight. But probably that could be due to the fact that PJ Washington was in foul trouble. So do you wonder if PJ Washington's not in foul trouble, will JB go back to more minutes of Biz versus Cody Zeller? I'm not really sure, you know, kind of what's going on here. Biyombo obviously is getting the start. Cody Zeller played well tonight, like you guys have mentioned, but it's been a weird rotation with this center rotation, mainly because of injury, but it just seems like it's been going back and forth in terms of which center gets the most playing time. And I'm not really sure what they're looking for here as they progress down the stretch here.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot too. I don't know. It is a pretty interesting question to ponder. And I just assumed that they would kind of plug this hole in one way or another at the trade deadline or through the buyout market, which it doesn't look like they're going to do. My guess would be they're saving Zeller up to an extent now that they kind of know they're trying to, you know, quote unquote going for it. I mean, they're going to try to get a top six seed, right? But the one weird thing about that, Richie, to your point, is that I still think they'd start Cody, you know, because if he's just not going against starting centers for a stretch of time, unless they switch it up at some point, it's like, I don't know, just from like a conditioning physicality standpoint, he'd need those reps as we go into the playoffs. But it is weird. It definitely is weird that Biz has been getting the start number one and just consistently seems to be getting more minutes here recently. My only guess was it's that they're trying to save Cody up. And you know what? Maybe that's the right call because he's a, you know, we should place him in a bubble probably soon anyways.
Yeah. So. Yeah, let Biz be the innings eater, I guess, is sort of the thought here. But yeah, I guess it doesn't bother me all that much at this point, even if it does leave Charlotte exposed at certain times. I am hopeful that, let's assume Charlotte gets a top six seed, but this can work for the play-in scenario too. Just for when Charlotte's in the postseason, quote unquote, whether that is the actual playoffs or the play-in scenario, man, I really hope we get, and a lot of this will depend on, you know, injuries, health, foul trouble, but I really do hope that the 48 minutes of center are as close to as humanly possible of PJ and Zeller, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't, clearly this coaching staff has far more trust in Biz, and I don't want to put like all of the faults on Biz. You know, it's like, I think he's Richie, you and I talked about this, I think kind of recently, like he ends up being a bit of a scapegoat in a lot of different ways. Because he's not part of the young core, you know, he's the worst guy in the rotation. Probably depends on maybe how you feel about the Martins or if they're really even in the rotation. But I just think in the postseason, like it's imperative that your 48 minutes of center are as much Zeller and as much PJ as humanly possible. And really that extends out to like your 96 minutes of center and power forward need to be Zeller, PJ, Bridges, and probably some Hayward too. Right. I think you have to get as close to that 48 and that 96 minute groupings with those two guys and with those four guys.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only matchup that makes that untenable, here we are talking about Hornets playoff matchups, that makes that like completely untenable would be against Philadelphia. Right.
Of course,
like,
right.
I think every other, like Atlanta with Capella, maybe Milwaukee, yeah. But I don't even know if Brooke Lopez is going to be playing for Milwaukee in the playoffs. So there's only a few matchups that you're like, oh yeah, PJ can't really play five in the Eastern Conference. So I think that door should be open.
Atlanta's a very good offensive rebound team. So maybe if you thought, oh, we really need Biz to shore up the glass or whatever, but I'd rather sacrifice that and then just go to that series, like a Hawks Hornets, like how quickly would, I mean, I guess Capella's been really good for them, but like, I do feel like that game would, that matchup could like very quickly boil down to like Collins at the five, PJ at the five, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you both teams go to battle from there. But
the nostalgia matchup I'm pulling for is New York Charlotte first round though. I just think that would be so fun. Just like if you were around for early 90s Hornets, mid 90s Hornets basketball, that playoff matchup would mean something to you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought you were going to say, Spencer, as long as Robin Lopez isn't in the playoffs, I think we'll be good at the five. I mean, his hook shots, man, tonight were just freaking ridiculous.
He threw in some slop. Washington, this game was only like kind of close because they just threw in some slop tonight. Mm-hmm. Seriously, like Westbrook.
Hachimura has shown some improvement, man. It feels like he can shoot on every zone on the court there. But yeah, I mean, we had no answer for him.
He made the three assists he had tonight may have been a season high he's had in a season. And also about half his shots are coming from the mid-range still too. He's still not a very efficient offensive player, though. He was like quite good against Charlotte. Yeah. And the face-up like drive-by he had on PJ was like, that should hurt PJ a little bit, honestly. That shouldn't have felt too good for that to happen.
Yeah, it just didn't feel like Hornets were like locked in for like 60% of this game because they knew that they could just come back and score and make some stops here and there. And just Washington's team is just poor on both ends of the court.
Did this feel like watching a Hornets game like a couple of years ago? Like just this sort of like, you're not sure what the direction of the franchise, like what's Washington doing? Like now between now and when they inevitably trade Brad Beal, I just don't know what I'm not sure what the plan is. And you're just sort of like floating around watching one guy, you know, run a bunch of pick and roll and try to generate offense. You're looking at these late lottery picks and Hachimura was okay tonight. Denny Advia struggled mightily, but I don't know. It felt like watching a Hornets game in 2018. It's just like,
I see what you mean. Yeah. Just kind of like, what am I watching? What are either one of these teams? Where are they going now? Obviously we have some context as Hornets fans with LaMelo out.
Yeah.
To be looking up, but yeah, Washington, well, I tell you what, that's sad set of affairs right now. And, I do think, and then we can move on here. I think they'll trade Beal in the offseason. I think it was fine for them not to deal him midseason. You know, it's always easier to make those deals when people know when they're drafting anyways and what they're actually parting ways with in terms of draft capital. So, but they got to do something. I mean, this Russell Westbrook deal, though,
It's such a weird epilogue for him. Like as he truly fades into like not no longer being like a winning, like a really like a true winning basketball player. Yeah, it's bizarre. The stat, I mean, the triple doubles are I guess are cool, but they really do very little to drive like winning efficient, you know, half court basketball.
Last two players I do want to mention, and you guys can add to this if you'd like before we get into the trade deadline stuff of last week. I do want to mention Gordon Hayward because he has been, I guess, struggling lately. He just really hasn't been inserted into the game where it feels like his presence has been felt. He had a pretty strong start to this game where he had played in all 12 minutes of the first quarter, had 15 points in the first quarter, 2 of 3 in the mid-range, or the long mid-range, excuse me, and 3 of 3 from behind the arc. He finished the game with 26 points on 59% true shooting percentage. He definitely had some lulls in this game where, like, in the middle of the game, it just didn't feel like everything was going for him. But, you know, in the beginning of the game and also towards the end, they went to him a couple times late. And then Devontae Graham, I think that with LaMelo out, he's one player like Malik Monk is that's going to have to step up. And he's played very well recently. And almost all of his, well, not all of his success, but most of his success has been on those above the break threes where he was so good last season. And I actually tweeted this before the Phoenix game, but he's sixth in the NBA and above the break 3-point percentage in the, like, his last handful of games of those players that have shot like a healthy number from behind the arc. And to Brian's point earlier, one of the more telling plays at the end of the game was when they were trying to get the ball out of his hands because they know that he and Rozier are their best players in the clutch. And I don't know if it was, I think it might have been Rui and Avdija that were kind of making this like blitz at him. And he just calmly split it with a pass to Miles at the nail, and then Miles went up and finished it with the dunk. So teams do know that he's great in clutch play. So those are the only two players that I wanted to mention before we moved on to the trade deadline.
Yeah, they trapped Devontae with like a minute left in the third quarter too. And he kicked it out. He skipped it to Miles who then got it to Hayward for a layup right at the rim. I thought this was a good game for Miles at the nail and like as like a link up player. I thought he made some like pivotal plays for them offensively tonight.
I thought Washington had some chances to throw two at Rozier when he had the ball at the top towards the end of that game too earlier. Well, I don't think they ever actually did. Similar to what you're talking about with Devontae with about a minute left, but I thought they had some chances to do that, get it out of his hands earlier. They didn't. You know, Charlotte too, they're just, even without LaMelo, they are, anytime they see a high hedge off of a ball screen, Devontae's going to get it out quickly. When Biz is off the floor, whether it's Zeller or PJ in there at five, it's five really good passers now.
Yes.
Like that's what makes them so hard to defend.
Yeah.
Without, like, you know, if you're in a casual fan, you just look at their roster, you're just like, I don't understand how this team does this as consistently as they do. They just spray it around the floor really good, really consistently.
Yeah. And even when Monk and LaMelo aren't playing, because they can still get to the lineup of Graham, Rozier, Hayward, in you know, either PJ, Miles, or Cody, some combination of those three.
Spencer, you mentioned this earlier about a Hornets-Knicks matchup, and currently they're 4-5 in the East right now.
I'm monitoring it daily. I'm watching it, yeah.
Who do you think on a national scale, more people have trust in, the Hornets or Knicks in a 7-game series? Not coming from us, but like just from like national outsiders, what do you think?
I don't know. The answer is probably neither, but just because the Knicks play in a big market, it's probably like New York. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's not like a whole lot of thought put into it. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, Julius Randle was an all-star, right? Yeah, we trust the Knicks more.
I think it would almost be entirely dependent on like whether LaMelo was playing or not.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
But yeah, right. It is funny to think about. I mean, look, everything's so bunched up in the East. You know, this stuff could be different in 10 days from now or whatever. But like, it is funny to think about. Like, it's all about to be April, and Spencer's monitoring the New York. Like this could like perhaps the thought 3 months ago of Charlotte, New York being the 4-5 matchup.
It's hilarious.
It's just, it's hilarious. Yeah, it's amazing.
Also, that carries like real offseason, probably ramifications for either one of these teams if they actually do make a 4-5 series and then win a playoff series to inevitably lose to Brooklyn in the second round. But still, like, you win a playoff series as New York or Charlotte, to Brian's point, from where those two franchises came into this season. Now, Steve Dolan or Michael Jordan is going to say, all right, we're one step away. And that's probably not going to be, that's probably not going to be very close to the truth. We're probably still 3 steps away, but the East States. So
New York can have what, $40 million in cap space.
Yeah.
It's like, we are going to offer sheet the hell out of Lonzo Ball.
Right.
Like the Pelicans, like, buddy, you probably have to crack open the purse. We've been here before, you know?
We paid Marvin Williams and Nick Batum that summer. Yes, that summer was the cap spike. But Charlotte also finished sixth in the East. They finished sixth in the East, tied for third. Yeah, third. So it's like kind of the same thing. You know what I mean? It's
very bunched up again too.
We don't have a bunch of like mid-level free agents that we have to re-sign this summer. We do have free agents, so at least are saved from that. Making the same deal with the devil twice there, I think.
Well, that's a nice segue to the trade deadline of last week, because the Hornets did not make a, well, they made a move, but they didn't really make a move. They got Brad Wanamaker, who to me is just strictly an insurance kind of minute eater guy right now. It's great that he has some kind of Boston Celtic pedigree. You know, those players seem to do well in our roster, and I believe he's played with Rozier and Hayward, but again, that can only take you so far. Is it just me, or when you saw him out there against Phoenix, he played way smaller than six. I didn't realize he was 6'3". Like, I looked at him, he looked like he was like 5'11". Like, he was like, they went to him the first play of the game, and like, he was getting mismatched in the post, and there was like a lot of offensive rebounds over his head. Like, he just was a little bit smaller, and obviously his shooting numbers went down this year in Golden State. I mean, is there anything to add to Brad Wanamaker being on this team right now, or is he really just a minutes eater, like I said?
Yeah, I just think he's deep pitch insurance. I would have understood this trade a lot more if we would have gotten a second round pick, which is what I expected. So I don't know. Like, it was just a cash grab, you know, obviously, which is fine. Like, it's what owners do, especially when money's a little bit tight, which it is right now for all these owners. So I kind of do understand a little bit from that perspective, but I'm also like, Gorgie Jane got, I think, like $1 million of San Antonio's mid-level exception. So it's like, you got cash, but I mean, I don't know how much of Wanamaker's salary Charlotte's paying. Probably not very much, because they saved Golden State so freaking much luxury tax by just taking him. So I don't know. It's just like, the juxtaposition of Michael Jordan sometimes with the moves that he makes, like this one, which again, like, it's not spend too much time on, it's small marbles, but like, it's a cash grab, but you also like want to win. And a lot of the free agents moves that you make that seem to be way ahead of schedule and ill-timed are to win games. So it's like, why wouldn't you try to improve your roster for just as much money, like seriously improve your roster, by going and getting a guy like Jang for actually less money than you're ultimately going to pay for this Wanamaker acquisition? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I don't understand sometimes. Like, it's just kind of hard to wrap your mind around. It doesn't do anything for this basketball team. What is the real financial win here?
Yeah, Gorgie could have really helped this team out. I mean, he's a knockdown 3-point shooter, and he would be a defensive upgrade over Biz. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Yeah, I actually thought it was a good bit of business from San Antonio, like the moves they made with Aldridge and signing Jang. I thought that was a good job by their San Antonio's front office right at the deadline there. Yeah, Jang would have been a nice little help for Charlotte. Could have given, if LaMelo ever comes back, you know, he's a pick and pop partner for LaMelo.
And by the way, they could have done this even after acquiring Brad Wanamaker. I mean, Charlotte still has like 1.8 in salary cap space. If they just literally give him that and stay one penny under the cap, they outbid what San Antonio did. So that's the part of it. I'm like, I mean, can you not see this as clearly the spot on your roster that needs help?
Yeah. It was like,
it's just frustrating.
It was just like, And because I'm fine with them playing the deadline more conservatively, though, I do think there is some like weird dissonance between going out and getting Gordon Hayward this offseason, even if that was a move that, you had eyes beyond 2021 on. You were thinking this is going to help us not just in year one, but years two and three or whatever. And we've discussed that transaction ad nauseum, and sort of like how it made sense both as an addition in 2020 and perhaps in 2021, even if we sort of didn't agree with the principle of going for it. But then Charlotte is doing a little bit of a weird thing of we're pushing some of our chips in. We're saying we're all in, but really like we're also playing things pretty conservatively as far as like how we're keeping tabs over our draft assets and our young players. And like, I actually think like, again, I am totally for them being very cautious with their picks. I didn't like any of these proposed deals that were being floated publicly by insiders for Turner. All of them felt like they were a little bit too much. I would have been curious to see what the actual cost of Rashawn Holmes, Holmes trade was. When I talked with Sacramento people, they felt like he had to be at least a first round pick. Mm-hmm. That felt a little bit too much for me too, depending on protections and stuff. And even
for an expiring contract, that's hard to do,
especially because like I do think a Sacramento deal I don't think they would have been super interested in someone like Monk, who's a restricted free. Like if you had to include a good young player, I think it probably would have had to have been like, you know, Miles or PJ, and then you're like, I'm walking away. This is too much. Yeah. I'm not doing this for a guy that's going to be like a, you know, potentially just a rental for this team.
Right. Rental for a rental. That was kind of my thinking. Trade Monk for Holmes. We'll throw in a first round pick, even though it might be a little bit more protected than maybe you would want at Sacramento. But I think when it all comes down to it, Brian, you're probably happy that they didn't go after Turner or Holmes. So
no, I am. Yeah, I am. Even though it's like it, you know, you left yourself. They're a little exposed at center. They are. I mean, everyone knows this. Even the casual people following this team know that that not only are they exposed at that position in terms of depth, but like when you look at this, when you look at how this team performs on both ends of the court, like. They are missing a pressure point at both ends of the rim, you know, and there were guys that could have gone out and helped that. People were also talking up the Turner fit, like, oh man, this guy will be such a great pick and pop fit with LaMelo. Like, I don't really like Miles Turner's offense that much, to be totally honest with you.
I think the people haven't watched enough of Miles Turner.
PJ is a better pick and pop shooter, period. Like, it's end of story. Yeah, like, it's not even close. You know, Turner is like a 31% three-point shooter. He doesn't post up. He can't rim run. He's not really a lob guy. He doesn't get to the line that much. I was just like, this certainly he would help the parts of the defense, like the rim protection in a certain sense. But that is like, oh man, Charlotte could go get a pick and pop partner for LaMelo. It's like they literally have that on the roster already. Like he's 23 years old and on a second year of a rookie contract.
I would say that Miles Turner is not like off the table for Charlotte either. I mean, that is a pretty good number that he's at. I shouldn't say it's pretty. I mean, it's a fine number, 17.5, I think, for two more years at age. I think he's literally turned 26 this week. Maybe like I still think that's a possibility for the Hornets. It just makes sense in a lot of different ways. It's the number one needle in the roster. It's a pretty decent cap number. He fits their age timeline. Like I could see that happening, but just from talking to like some Pacers guys leading up to the trade deadline, back to kind of what you were saying, BG, I understand Miles Turner is one of the more impactful defensive centers in the league, but I think we don't talk about his offensive liabilities enough. And I think it should be mentioned too. I mean, depending on like what reporting you believe or whatever, I mean, it sounds like the Hornets did try to get in on Vucevic the last second too. I wonder if it was they were actually trying to do it the whole time and just couldn't come up with a package, or they found out what Chicago was offering and it was like, well, we can actually give you an extra young player that Chicago can't, but we're not going to throw in that extra first. I think it was probably reactionary. I think it was probably, we heard the price and then tried to get in at the last second, but I don't hate that trade for Chicago is some of the narrative, but I'm glad the Hornets didn't do that.
This is what happened, Spencer. This is actually what happened. I don't know if you know this, but so what happened was,
tell me.
Just let you know. So they had this deal in place and Monk was included and they ran it by Clifford and Clifford was like, who, Monk? No. I didn't play him in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Let's nix this trade. That's really what happened, Spencer.
Yeah, I could.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that happening. Yeah. By the way, it is not. Bulls have not looked great since Vucevic got there. Although he's played quite well, he's obviously a tremendous offensive player. Yeah, my initial read on that was, and I say this as someone that's like probably a little bit higher than Wendell Carter Jr. Even though I am worried, like he very much is a prospect in distress at the moment. I still think he can become a starter on a winning team, but I'm having to back away from some of the projections I had with him coming into the league 3 years ago. When I initially saw that deal, I thought this is too much. And I don't know, I chewed on it a little bit more and it was fine. Like they went for it and it better work for them. And right now, like early returns are not like entirely encouraging. This would be like if Chicago like ate shit down the stretch here, it would be a really bad look. It'd be a really bad look.
After it would be a disaster. I don't remember who tweeted it today, but it was. I don't hate this as much for Chicago some, but I think this is probably pretty good logic. It's like, hey, we're pushing all our chips in to go get Nick Vucevic, a center who's probably on the last year or two before we start to see serious decline in his game. And we did this so we actually can retain Zach LaVine. So we can pay Zach LaVine probably $200 million. That's why we did this trade. It's like, when you think of it from that logic, you're like, this could get ugly fast.
Yeah. And they didn't like, they, you know, I'm not surprised they couldn't swing the Markkanen deals to New Orleans for long. Like that just never made a whole bunch of sense for me. Unless they were really trying to leverage Lonzo's, you know, sort of like upcoming restricted free agency as a reason for why New Orleans would want to move him, but he's such a great young player and Markkanen kind of stinks. So those hypotheticals never made a whole lot of sense to me. Yeah. I thought Orlando, they had a weird day at the deadline, but I thought they mostly did. I don't know. Maybe the return was not as great as everyone wanted it to be, but they got a lot of stuff, you know, so
decisive in what they wanted to do. I'm glad that they didn't just hang on to Vooch and hang on to Aaron Gordon because they weren't really going anywhere with those two, you know, with the roster that they had. So, yeah, they might have gotten more picks, or maybe they should have gotten more picks in the return. But overall, I think they did what they had to do and get off of those guys. And as far as the Hornets, as we mentioned, guys, they probably could have gone after Jang. He was a realistic get. Obviously, Drummond and LaMarcus Aldridge were these high-profile names that they really were never going to get. But I think when it's all said and done, being conservative, not making a move, and risking some of your future assets was really the way to go. So we want to thank you guys for tuning in to another Buzz Beat. For Spencer, for Brian, I am Richie. We'll see you guys next time.